Throughout most of his teens and 20s, Fleet Moll, a child of the 60s, felt lost. In a desperate attempt to find meaning and escape, he turned simultaneously to exploring Buddhism and drugs. Unfortunately, drugs became the more interesting and lucrative of the two and won over his psyche. After many years of dabbling in both, Moll was apprehended and sentenced to 25 years in prison for drug trafficking. His Dharma teacher recommended that he turn himself in and accept his sentence. So Moll went to jail, leaving his 9-year-old son and wife destitute. Feeling profound shame about what he'd done to his son, he was determined to reduce his sentence and change his ways. Through diligent meditation practice while in prison, and by disciplining his own body, speech, and mind, and practicing loving kindness towards all he met, he was eventually released after 14 years. Now, most prisoners were simply trying to kill time to get through the endless wasted years before they could start their real life again. Instead, Moll decided to take on time in prison as a chance to deepen his Buddhist spiritual practice. He meditated between 2 to 12 hours a day. It was a perfect opportunity to teach his mind to be less reactive and instead create the state of mind he wanted. He was surrounded by bitter, angry, chaotic energy. People wanted to do anything to distract themselves from their fate in prison. The TV was blaring 24/7. Men constantly got in fights and did anything that they could do to stay busy and not confront the reality of their situations. Noise, disarray, hostility, and rage sat on top of endless boredom every day in the penitentiary. He describes prison as a chronically angry and stressful place where it's hard to find any quiet. Shame and blame are the predominant modes. But, he says, I didn't want to throw away 14 years of my life. I was determined to be present, to learn everything I could from this, to use this as an opportunity to wake up. And I was determined to keep my heart open. Can you imagine? Now that's determination, isn't it? To keep your heart open amongst the most hardened of criminals. To meditate for hours every day in the midst of chaos, constant bedlam and aggravation. To choose loving kindness, even when you're being constantly humiliated and degraded. Determined not to be angry and bitter, one of the biggest lessons he said he learned was that circumstances are neutral. Now let me say that again because it's a difficult concept to grasp. Circumstances are neutral. And what he means by that is that it's our response to circumstances that shapes our lives. Two people can have the exact same experience, the same circumstances, and respond completely differently. So the difference is not in the experience, but in the way they internally make meaning of it. In his case, he was in prison with hundreds of others. Most men chose to respond with antagonism and frustration, but Moll chose to use it to hone his spiritual life. And guess what? He's now a successful executive coach, leadership trainer, speaker, and author with a new book called Radical Responsibility. Nelson Mandela, who who was imprisoned for 27 years for very different reasons, also chose to use his prison sentence as a way to grow his courage, his character, and kindness. Allowed only one visitor a year, sleeping on the hard ground as his bed, he was only permitted to write and receive one letter every 6 months. His prison time was dehumanizing and extremely difficult. Now, as you know, he was incarcerated for being a revolutionary, for attempting to overthrow the racist government, and for being a human rights activist. So it would have been easy to be outraged most of the time he was in prison, wouldn't it? Yet Mandela chose a different response. Through his kindness, over time, Mandela convinced hardened prison officials to advocate for him. And he began to lead all the prisoners and essentially run the prison. And when he was eventually released from prison in February 1990, he emerged a courageous leader who was ready to take on becoming the first black president of South Africa. As he joked, "In my country, we go to prison first and then become president." Even more astoundingly, when he emerged from jail, he forgave his jailers and asked the country to do the same. He recontextualized his experience. Now, many of you will know Mandela's famous quote upon leaving prison that's in your order of service. "As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew that if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison." Now, despite not having to undergo such challenging circumstances as Maul and Mandela, many of us live in prisons of our own making, don't we? In some way. Prisons in our mind, with our conditioned, unconscious reactions to the experiences in our lives. With everything going on in our country these days, oscillating rapidly between mass shootings, potential nuclear war, and climate disasters, to restrictions on women's bodies and human rights, it's easy to feel constantly on edge and angry, isn't it? And with the king of reaction tweeting 24/7 in response to everything coming across his radar, we're seeing reactivity modeled from the highest office in the land. No Mandela here. Social media and tweets heighten everyone's emotions at all hours of the day and night. People argue with one another more easily, put each other down, and treat each other in ways that they would never do in person. With social media, situations escalate faster than at any other time in our history. People are more frightened, more outraged, and bitter because reactivity has become the norm in our society now. Our respectful way of life, our national morals, our constitutional freedoms, laws, and even common decency and manners are being denigrated at every turn. Yet unfortunately, that reactivity that we may feel, it influences all aspects of our lives, our families, our relationships, and even our communities. Plus, it has us responding to hate with hate, to anger with anger, to divisiveness with divisiveness. So, my friends, this is why it's so especially important to come together in religious community and commit to regular spiritual practice. In community, we can choose to transform reactivity, to create a different reality on this planet. Our spiritual community gives us an oasis to slow down and breathe. Breathe with me now. It encourages us to pause and reflect upon our thoughts and consider our actions. It offers us a place to sing together, to meditate together, to hug one another. We need a place to mourn the many disorienting, painful things going on in our time, a place to practice creating a different response, a sacred space in which we can go within to collectively find compassion, seek justice, and help one another transform. A place to encourage one another to be spiritually courageous, because that's how we learn to move from reactivity to creativity, from reaction to creation. It's urgent that we move from reaction to creation, because if we're not part of the problem, my friends, sorry, I misspoke. It's urgent that we move from reaction to creation if we're not to be a part of the problem. It's what Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. asked us to do through nonviolent action. But what does it actually take to move from reaction to creation, other than just taking the C from the middle of the word and putting it in the front? Isn't that clever? It's just a simple switch we can make in our writing, not quite as simple in our actual being. Life will continually give us the same lessons, the same challenges, until we learn them and move on. We'll repeatedly bump up against similar difficulties and recurring scenarios until we change our inner experiences of them. So if you're struggling in your relationships or with your finances or in your health, or if you're having a hard time at work or with your children, or you're suffering from loneliness or depression, almost all spiritual teachings tell us we're likely to continue the struggle until we change our inner experience, our perceptions of these situations as much as we're able to. Unless we choose to repeat, to experience our repeating circumstances, these challenges that inevitably happen in life in a different way in our minds, unless we choose to recontextualize them, we're going to continue having the same reactions and the same painful internal struggle. Has anyone experienced the same reactions and the same internal painful struggle? I certainly do on a regular basis. There's a spiritual growth here is to look at all the typical situations that we face and decide what we want to create the next time those circumstances tempt us to react. We can look ahead and preempt our actions. That is what spiritual practice is for. So Buddhist and mindfulness traditions teach us that one of the things we can do is to become aware of circumstances that aggravate or upset us. We can make a physical or mental list of circumstances that typically trigger us, things that we struggle and fight with in our minds. Theologian and author Neil Donald Walsh says, "Every act is an act of self-definition." Let me say that again. Every act, everything we do, is an act of self-definition. So he encourages us to decide ahead of time who we want to be. Make a list of repeated things that throw you into negative emotions. Know what they are. And then ask yourself how you want to react the next time these things happen. Because they will. Life reliably repeats the things that push our buttons. And it gives us an opportunity to evolve ourselves. So choose ahead of time how you want to respond to those situations, who you want to be. And the next step is to decide the state of being that you want. Deciding that can help us avoid being drawn into reactivity. How do you want to feel? Let the feelings you want to feel be your guide. Who do you want to be in this world at this time? Do you want to be reactive and angry? Or do you value peace and kindness? So when we create our inner reality, we can all co-create a better external reality. Are you with me?
Yes.
For example, I'm going to share with you a mundane instance from my life, because I am no master at this. I can easily find myself feeling annoyed when my family members leave their dirty dishes in the sink. Or worse yet, out on the dining room table. Gabriel never does that, of course, right? I feel irritated by this situation repeatedly because I make up a story in my mind that it's done because they know that I will eventually clean them up. Is that right? But it doesn't feel good inside to get annoyed about this every time it happens. Nor does my story make me feel loving towards my family. On the contrary, I feel disconnected and resentful as a result. And then that carries out on into our other interactions. And of course, I also know I ultimately can't force people to do things the way I want them done. Shame, but it's true. So in an attempt to shift my typical reaction towards creation and to confront that situation in a different way, I could do the following. First of all, I remind myself of my values of love and connection. Every time I see the dishes in the sink or left out on the table, rather than be resentful, I could choose to feel gratitude for the reminder that there is loving family in my life. Now, their actions might not at that moment seem the most loving to me, but they're probably not doing it on purpose, but more out of forgetfulness or possibly laziness that has just nothing to do with me. And despite the dirty dishes, I'm grateful my family is in my life. And I want to enjoy them rather than feel resentful. So I can decide the next time I confront messy dishes lying around, and I know there are some waiting for me when I get home this afternoon, I'll choose to feel grateful for signs of my family. And if I fail and nevertheless feel annoyed because that's my habitual reaction, I can still remind myself as soon as I catch myself that I'm actually grateful to have a family. And I know Gabriel will be reminding me of that too, right? And then I can use this trigger as a regular spiritual practice of shifting from irritation to gratitude, from reaction to creation. So why would I do this work? Because I'm deeply committed to living a more loving, peaceful, connected life filled with joy. And I'd much rather feel gratitude and connection than annoyance. Now, this is a mundane situation, but it's a big spiritual lesson for me. And it's in the mundane that we get to practice this. If I can choose what I want to feel, to be in alignment with my values and who I want to be, then I will live a more contented and peaceful life. So I now turn this to you. What do you want to feel as you go through your day-to-day life? Who do you want to be? Do you want peace, contentment, and joy? Your feelings can be guided by your values. I recommend spending some time meditating to get clear on what you most value in life. But more than that even, what feelings nourish you the most? What states of being make you feel happy? So later this morning at our annual meeting, we have the chance to model the kind of world we want to create. The kind of compassionate leadership and mindfulness that we wish our world's leaders would exhibit. We can't ask them to do it out there if we're not doing it ourselves. So we have the opportunity to practice moving from reaction to creation. What happens when something doesn't go our way? What happens when we're deeply attached to something turning out the way we think it should, and it doesn't? I know I have hopes and attachments, and this will be a wonderful lesson in letting go. This is hard, but I invite us to use it as an occasion to live into our beautiful mission, into our covenant and our principles. Can we choose to listen to each other respectfully, trusting one another in the process, assuming good intentions, and speaking to one another with kindness and care? Or will we allow ourselves to get triggered and react to our differences of opinion? Sometimes we can be more committed to being right than being connected. And I ask us, is this who we want to be? Personally, I'd rather be connected, even though being right can feel so good in the moment. This morning is a perfect practice ground for us as a community. We have a chance to exercise respect, consideration, kindness, and compassion, the qualities that we want so badly in our wider world. We can remember that we're all interconnected and that the actions and responses we choose impact everyone around us. I invite you to breathe with me now. Take a deep breath and inhale your courage and exhale old habits. This is hard stuff, but it's what makes us spiritually courageous. Decide who you want to be and what positive feelings you want to feel and bring into the world. And then remember Neil Donald Walsh's words. Every act is an act of self-definition. My friends, who do you want to be? Who do we want to be as Unitarian Universalists? As spiritually courageous people. May you be who you want to be. Amen.